10 million tweets, 116,000 Instagram posts, and 61,500 Facebook posts. They were all part of a Russian-led misinformation campaign in the lead-up to the 2016 presidential election. On Monday, the Senate Intelligence Committee released two reports that shed new light on how broad this campaign was and who it targeted. The independent reports, commissioned by the Senate Intelligence Committee, analyzed tens of thousands of social media posts coordinated by the Internet Research Agency, a St. Petersburg-based group with connections to the Kremlin. Sound familiar? That's because back in February, Robert Mueller's office indicted a dozen employees of the Internet Research Agency and a Russian oligarch who contributed funding to the organization. Here's Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein at a press conference.
The defendants allegedly conducted what they called information warfare against the United States, with the stated goal of spreading distrust towards the candidates and the political system in general.
At the center of these new reports were also specific attempts by the Internet Research Agency to target African Americans and persuade them not to vote for Hillary Clinton. The report also faults tech companies like Facebook and Google for not sharing enough data to get closer to that answer. The findings are dramatic. Joining me now to help me unpack the latest reports are Craig Timberg, a national technology reporter for The Washington Post, and Darren Linville, an associate professor at the Clemson University College of Behavioral, Social, and Health Sciences. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having me, Tanzina.
Hello.
So, Craig, let's start with you. These reports are accusing companies like Google and Facebook of holding back information in this investigation. What can you tell us about this? I mean, they claim that they were cooperative. Obviously, this report says otherwise. What's really happening here, Craig?
The tech companies have come under fire now for more than 2 years for how they've handled this crisis. Virtually every lawmaker on Capitol Hill has been frustrated by the response from the companies. And now, you know, these two groups of very well-respected researchers have separately come to the conclusion that as much as we've learned this week from these reports, we would have learned a lot more had Facebook and Google and Twitter been more forthcoming in what they shared with the committee. And Google comes into for some particular criticism with how it gave information on YouTube where they submitted the videos, but none of the information around the videos. And Facebook withheld quite a few posts, all of the comments. So these researchers are echoing complaints we've heard for a couple years now.
Now, if they had been provided the data, Craig, that they say that they hadn't gotten, would the researchers have been able to determine how much these efforts actually influenced the election?
That was not a question that they or really anybody else I can think of has attempted to answer, because on a scientific level, it's not answerable. In order to get that answer, you'd have to run the election again, and you'd have to somehow, you know, remove one factor, which is the Russian disinformation campaign. So the efforts of these groups have been essentially what every researcher in the world who studied this have done. It's a forensic unpacking of what happened, an attempt to make sense of tactics and motives. And what we can say without the fear that we're possibly wrong is the Russians certainly were trying to influence that election and put a lot of sophisticated resources behind that effort.
Darren, I want to bring you in here because you've been studying the Internet Research Agency's messaging and tactics for years, and these new reports are basically telling us how this company tried to appeal specifically to African Americans. Can you give us a sense of what they did?
Well, what they've done is really just a continuation of what the KGB did for the Soviet Union in days gone by, back in the 60s and 70s. They tried to influence the civil rights movement then, and they're trying to do very much the same thing today. They see issues like the Black Lives Matter movement as a wedge to both drive Americans farther apart and obviously potentially influence elections.
And what are some of the components of these campaigns? I mean, I'm thinking about folks who are listening to this and saying, did I see one of those ads? What would it have looked like? Where could I have come in contact with this?
Sure. And that's changed a lot through time. My colleague Patrick Warren and I here at Clemson have looked at a lot of tweets, really more than is healthy for any one individual to look at.
I'm sorry. That sounds painful.
Yeah, it's been an ordeal. But their tactics have changed through time. So back during the election, they did things like they had an organization called Black Matters US, and that organization had a website. That website is still live. Your listeners can go there today, blackmattersus.com, and look at it. It hasn't obviously been updated for a while, but it's still up. And that website had Instagram accounts, YouTube videos, as well as obviously Facebook and Twitter. And they tried to organize actual events in here in the United States. They even had a podcast. It was very broad-reaching in their approach. But then they also had a lot of accounts that just purported to be normal Americans who were part of the Black Lives Matter movement. And those types of accounts continued right up until this past election. Mike Patrick and I traced a number of them that were active right up into November of this year.
I want to play a clip for you from a press conference held by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein back in February.
The Russians also recruited and paid real Americans to engage in political activities, promote political campaigns, and stage political rallies. The defendants and their co-conspirators pretended to be grassroots activists. According to the indictment, the Americans did not know that they were communicating with Russians.
Darren, how is it possible that we did not know we were dealing with Russians?
Well, they're very good at their job.
Okay.
And frankly, they've gotten better. They have recruited really intelligent group of people that understand social media, that understand the pulse of the United States. And you can see that improve over time. The accounts that we've traced most recently have grown very quickly in the number of followers. I've seen accounts grow from zero followers to 20,000 in just a matter of a few months. One account that we were following, an account called Polite Melanie, even won the Chicago Tribune's Tweet of the Week contest back in September. So to do something like that, you really have to have a sense of American culture and the American mentality. And they do. They've sent people here to do research, and they've recruited people that are fluent English speakers.
Craig, I want to ask you, these reports are not linked to the Russian government specifically, but Rosenstein's July 2018 indictments did charge 12 Russian government agents with meddling in Hillary Clinton's campaign and other Democratic Party organizations. Craig, does this new report give us a better picture of the overall Russian effort?
What these reports show us is, with a degree of completeness and detail we've never had before, is how the disinformation campaign happened. It doesn't get into the question of how the Russian intelligence service hacked into Clinton campaign emails. It doesn't really speak on those matters. What it does is it helps us understand how Russia essentially took control of a massive number of accounts across every social media platform and turned them against American democracy. And so, you know, we've learned things about Instagram and YouTube and Tumblr and Medium and Vine, you name it. There's details in these reports that illuminate how shrewdly the Russians, you know, ran this influence operation. I have to echo Darren's very wise point. Man, they were good. I mean, you read through these tweets and posts and you think, yeah, man, they know us. They know us probably better than we know ourselves in some ways.
And that brings me to the next question, which is, a lot of Americans are using these technology platforms to stay in touch with each other. But what does this latest development, Craig, tell us about our increasingly fraught relationship with big tech companies like Google and Facebook, particularly Congress's relationship with those companies?
I think there's been a lot of signs for a long time now that, for all of the wonderful qualities of social media, that they really open a Pandora's box of garbage into our conversation that probably wouldn't be there without the social media. You know, when you give essentially everybody in the world the opportunity to say whatever they want to anybody they want to, it has unintended consequences. And that's what we're living with today. And while the focus of these reports are what the Russians did, there are disinformation projects happening all over the world, some aimed at the United States, some aimed at people in other countries, that they're global, they're massive. And I frankly find it terrifying. And I actually don't know what to do about it. I mean, so you're right that Congress and the government is focused on this in a way they weren't before. They're skeptical of the tech companies. But you very frequently run into very concrete free speech problems when you try to regulate these things. And so as much as all of us would probably like a kind of like solution to this problem, I honestly don't know what the solution to this problem is, other than all of us individually being somewhat more skeptical of the kind of stuff that rolls through our Facebook and Twitter feeds.
Darren, what about you? Your thoughts on that? I mean, I know there's this term fake news has been tossed around, oftentimes inaccurately, for real news. But how, you know, what can be done? Whose feet should be at the fire right now in terms of making sure? Is it the tech companies? Is it the U.S. government?
Sure. Well, Craig's right. This is becoming much more of a global issue. We're not the only targets. The very things that we love about America, our openness, our freedom of speech, those are the things that give the Russians an asymmetrical advantage when it comes to disinformation. They can hit us hard with this sort of thing, and well, we can't hit back because they don't have the same freedoms. And the same is true with a lot of other countries that are engaging in this, including Iran. And we've seen disinformation coming out of Saudi Arabia recently with the Khashoggi murders. But what to do is it's hard to know. We would certainly like to see the platforms doing more. They have been doing more in the past year, certainly, but I think they could help us out even more. We haven't seen them very forthcoming, and the report pinpoints this with a lot of information. They would rather this not be a story. I'm sure they would prefer us not having this conversation right now. But they could certainly do more and be more forthcoming. Twitter hasn't released any additional tweets for the past 6 months.
And we've got about a minute left. I'd like to ask both of you quickly for your thoughts. Are we ready for 2020?
No.
Okay.
I like that. Absolutely not. No, we are not ready. And we're not going to be ready. We're going to be living this.
Darren? Yes,
I completely agree. From the Russians' perspective, this is cheap. Their whole program costs less than one U.S. fighter plane. And any response we're going to have is going to be expensive.
Darren Linville is an associate professor at Clemson University. Darren, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
And Craig Timberg is a national reporter covering technology for The Washington Post. Thank you, Craig.
It's been my pleasure.